Again to BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone. Recently, I was at the New Hampshire Porcupine Liberty Festival, Porkfest, and I've been publishing interviews from the Porkfest, very casual outdoor interviews, and that included a two-part interview with the author Boston Tea Party, and then a interview with Stefan Molyneux. What we have today is going to be a little bit different. When I was on my way to Porkfest in the motorhome, I stopped at a campground, and I recorded some of my thoughts on the way to the way to Porkfest on the road. And now this evening, I am on my way back home. So what I'm going to call this is There and Back Again. That's going to be the name of this podcast. So it's going to begin with, let's jump back in time to a week and a half ago to my trip to New Hampshire and to Porkfest. And I'll let you hear the On the Way There podcast. And then I'll come back and I'll do the Back Again podcast as I am now. In New York, on my way back to Ohio, in the motorhome, recording the second half of what you're about to hear. So, without anything further, here is the there portion of There and Back Again. Okay, BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone. It is Sunday evening. I don't even know the date. I think it's something around the 17th. Or so. I do believe the month is June of 2012. So this is a very informal podcast. I am in the motorhome. Nikki and I are in the motorhome, Nikki the dog. Baggy stayed home with my wife. My wife insisted that Baggy stay there with her because although Baggy does very well in the motorhome once we're stopped, she really doesn't like the traveling aspect of the motorhome experience. So my wife insisted that she keep Baggy there at the house with her, and Baggy seemed to appreciate that, as she just, you know, couldn't really care less about anything else that's going on anyway. Okay, so anyway, a quick recap. Again, this is very informal. Bad microphone, bad acoustics. You know, in the motorhome, in a park, in a campgrounds, in Pennsylvania, on my way to Porkfest. I was supposed to be on the road on the way to Porkfest, like Wednesday or Thursday of the week before Porkfest, and we decided to have some minor work done to the motorhome before it hit the road. We try to keep the motorhome literally ready as a, what, you know, those of us in the survivalist mode, if I can call myself that, without causing, you know, people's eyes to bug out and them to imagine someone in Montana in a cave. But for those of us who are, let's use the word prepper as better than survivalist, because I'm not really a survivalist. But those of us in the prepper community, I like to keep the motorhome as much as possible in a position so that it's what we refer to as a bug out vehicle. It can go at any, I don't winterize it ever. I keep the motorhome so that we can just jump in it and go. And that's not because the zombies are coming or whatever. And it's not because we have any kind of evil thoughts of whatever. It just simply means that there are times, and a variety of things can happen, there are just times that you need to jump in a vehicle and be able to go and get someplace and be self-sufficient for a period of time and not have to rely on things like credit cards and banks functioning and, you know, what your employer is doing and all these kind of things like this. Now, and a good example of this was last year, last September, August, I had developed a relationship with my mother-in-law. After the death of my mother, my mother-in-law, my wife's mother, of course, that's what a mother-in-law is. You don't have to explain that, Ben. after the death of my own mother years ago, my mother-in-law really stepped up and became that mother figure to me. I mean, she filled that in every way. You can't possibly ask for a better mother than my mother-in-law became for me after the death of my mother. And so I would talk to her on the phone on a daily basis. I was living in Ohio. She's living in Missouri. My wife is off at work, and I'm talking to my mother-in-law almost on a daily basis, talking about the garden, talking about this, talking about that, talking about the cats, the animals, the birds, just, you know, all the things that were happening in her life and all the things that were happening in my life. And we just interacted constantly like that. And so in, let's just say, August of 2011, this was a regular thing with my mother-in-law. I would call her, or she would call me over the course of the day, and we would say, you know, what's going on with this? How's your sunflowers growing? Do you have, you know, how's your peppers looking? Do you have, what herbs are coming out of the ground? And, you know, did these particular seeds sprout this year? And we would talk about all these things. And in August of 2011, she was active, she was healthy, she was gardening, she was going places, she was having a late 40s Lincoln that she was in the process of restoring it piece by piece. And so we would talk about that, we would talk about all kinds of things. And then the 1st of September hit, and one night she had a bad experience and she fell and couldn't get back up again. And one thing led to the other, and it became clear that we needed to get to her fast. Now, where we were in Ohio, where she was in Missouri, we're talking about a 12 to 14 hour drive. And so, fortunately, because we kept the motorhome in the condition we kept it in, we literally could just jump in it and go. And we could park in her driveway and stay as long as we needed. Fully self-sufficient, or we can plug in and, you know, utilize her utilities there and so forth. And that's what we did. And we were able to get there, and my wife was able to be with her. And it took about a month for the doctors to figure out the situation. And what they found was that she had advanced and very complicated cancer in her liver. And it went from her being a very healthy, early 60s, vibrant woman, full of life, and an extremely rapid deterioration from that September until her death in early January of 2012. Now, during that time frame, we went back and forth from Ohio to Missouri, I don't even know how many times. Part of the time I went back and forth by myself and left my wife in Missouri. Part of the time my wife and myself made the trip. But the point being that had we not made preparations ahead of time, this really strange occurrence that we had no idea was going to happen to a young, you know, as far as old people go, young as in her early 60s, for this kind of a situation to happen so quick, it happened with no warning, and we were prepared for it because we were prepared. because we were prepared for whatever might happen. We were prepared for when the remnants of Hurricane Ike came through Ohio and ripped the roof off of our house and devastated our community and took the power out for, I believe it was like 12 or 14 days that we were out of power, and some areas of Ohio were even worse. And because of the preparations that my wife and I had made ahead of time, that was not even an inconvenience. It was just sort of a fun exercise. You know, we stabilized the house. We had our own power. We had our own way to cook and to have hot water and to have all the things that we needed to have. And it was actually kind of fun. It was kind of interesting. So that aspect of the prepper lifestyle pays off without a zombie apocalypse or without a governmental crash or without any of the horrible things that people tend to think about when they think of why people prepare for bad events. So anyway, that was a long rambling rant about prepping that wasn't really relevant to the badquicker.com podcast or to anything that, you know, to do with liberty or whatever. But you know, prepping is just, it just makes common sense. It's something that 100 years ago people did because it was smart. Not because they distrusted their government or because, you know, they thought there was going to be an economic collapse. None of those reasons. It was just basic common sense to have 6 or 8 months or a year's worth of food stashed away in a root cellar. That was just basic common sense. And somehow people have moved away from that. And we think that somehow it's smart to live week to week, where if there was a trucker strike and the grocery stores couldn't get their food deliveries for 2 or 3 days, you know, the whole community would shut down over that. People would be panicked in some places over that, and somehow that's good. Anyway, so that's the prepper rant for today. So I was saying all that to say this. So we keep the motorhome, or we try to keep the motorhome, in as good a condition as possible and in road-ready condition. So we had no plans to go to Porkfest whatsoever. And then conditions changed, and we thought, okay, well, we'll send Kai and Kai's sister to Porkfest. And then conditions changed again, and it turns out, okay, you know, I'm going to go to Porkfest too, and I'll go ahead and bring the motorhome, and maybe we can record some things, and all these plans change. And so I think, okay, well, then better do a real quick service on the motorhome and make sure it's, you know, up to spec. And then problems start to come up, and we start to find out that it needs some major work. And this threw us off on our time frame. So rather than being ready to hit the road and go to Porkfest, I was going to go, you know, well early. I was going to take off from home like on Wednesday or so and roll in and take my time and really just take a nice casual drive and then roll into New Hampshire at the Rogers campground like maybe Friday night or Saturday morning, you know, and it would be a real casual thing. But because of unexpected difficulties, I ended up not taking off from Ohio until Sunday morning. Now, if you think about that, we had assumed that the motorhome was perfect. We have maintained it. We did all the normal things that you do to maintain a vehicle. And it just so happened that we decided to do a couple of other things to it, a couple minor modifications to it, and in doing those we discovered major problems. Had we not done that, had we just assumed that the motorhome was fine, Sunday morning, if we had waited to the last moment to go to Porkfest, and I had taken off Sunday morning with the motorhome to go to Porkfest, not knowing what was wrong with it, it would have quite possibly broken down before we even got out of Ohio. And in all likelihood, I would have never got to Porkfest at all because it would have left me. And it took, as it was, it took a week to get all the repairs done to it. So, you know, I would have missed Porkfest altogether. So my point in all of that, that whole long, like 10-minute rant or whatever, was to point out that the more prepared you are, the better you off you are, whether it's a big emergency or whether it's just, you know, how life is. Sometimes life just jumps up and kicks you right in the teeth. And if you're not prepared for it, it's really devastating. But if you are prepared for it, it's not that it doesn't hurt. It's just that life goes on, and the impact of these crazy things that happen in life are so much less if you have some basic preparations for these things. You know, a little bit of money put aside. And I know that's easy to say. Put money aside. That's easy to say if you have money. But if you don't have money, how do you put money aside? Well, you know, that's a really hard question. But you have to work over a long term to get rid of debt so that you can put money aside. So anyway, so that's not at all this is not at all following the theme of badquaker.com here. But I did want to get that out, it's really important to be prepared for things like this. So anyway, so in the long run, here I am, Nikki and I in the motorhome. Yeah, I said Nikki, huh? She's looking at me with her big bat ears. Nikki and I are in the motorhome in a campground in Pennsylvania in a light drizzle rain. And Nikki's watching out the window because the campground that we're in is packed with rabbits. Rabbits are running everywhere. And right now it's just dusk, and rabbits love to be out at dusk. So even though there's a light rain, with it being dusk, there's rabbits all over the place. And Nikki is very intrigued because she's not accustomed to seeing rabbits. From her reaction, I think she thinks they're cats. Yeah, she looked at me. I think she thinks they're cats. I think she thinks they're some kind of mutated demonic cats hopping around in the rain. You know, who knows what a dog is thinking, but we, as pet owners, we always project these things upon our pets. So do I have an actual bad Quaker, you know, liberty-oriented, property rights-oriented, zero-aggression principle-oriented thing to talk about on the podcast, or am I just going to talk about, you know, prepping and rain and rabbits and dogs or whatever? Well, I don't know. I will take this opportunity. One of the things I really enjoy about campgrounds is that very often the people who run campgrounds prefer to operate in cash. And there's a wide variety of reasons for that, that should be obvious without me saying them. But, and I'm not trying to accuse campground operators of anything particularly. But if you do very much driving around across country and you go into campgrounds with an RV, and if you offer plastic or cash, and I didn't do it, I should have done it, and I kind of kicked myself afterwards, but when I asked the lady, do you prefer plastic or do you prefer paper money? And she said, well, if you don't mind, we like to have paper money. And, you know, I wanted to say, well, what would you think about silver? I wanted to say it. And I don't know why I chickened out. I really don't know why. I've said things like that before. But in this case, for some reason, I didn't. I didn't feel comfortable saying it. But, you know, I should have. I really should have. The more that all of us reach out to people and offer things like that, and make an. I was talking to a lady just the other day, and I had the wonderful opportunity. I said, "Well, I'm going up to New Hampshire to this thing, and it's a big get together, and there are a lot of liberty oriented people and libertarians and you know other kind of crazy people." And she said, "Well, now, what really is a libertarian?" And it was like, you know. That's like asking an old person to tell you about their medical condition, asking me to tell you about libertarianism. So, you know, it was a wonderful opportunity, and we need to take advantage of opportunities like that when they pop up, and an opportunity that can happen specifically if you camp a lot or if you go to campgrounds and so forth. Ah, there's the phone. is to offer, you know, hard cash, real money, offer silver, offer even trading cards and dime cards. You know, Don't Tread on Meme has those cool little dime cards. And one of the shows, well, somebody that we do commercials for here on badquaker.com is Shar Silver. And, you know, if you've got one of those cards with you, which I try to keep one with me, and just show it to somebody. I did this in a coin shop not long ago. I was buying some junk silver, and I said, "Have you seen one of these?" And I showed him a Shar Silver card. And he was just blown away by it. And I said, "That's not all. If you look up on your computer, if you do a search on Don't Tread on Meme and take a look at their dime cards," and he was, this coin shop owner was really intrigued because he saw a profit margin right there, right before his eyes. You can take a dime that in melt silver is worth, I don't know what they're worth right now, I'm thinking maybe $3, $3.50, something like that. And you can laminate it, and you can put a cool picture with it, and you can make a meme out of it, and you can sell it for $5. Now, this does a multitude of things. First off, it gets that silver back into circulation. It pays for your labor of laminating the thing and coming up with a logo and all that kind of thing, and it puts a slight profit into your pocket. Well, all those are things that a business person recognizes right off. And so, and unfortunately, I didn't have a dime card with me. I only had the Shar Silver cards. But that even the Shar Silver cards got him thinking. And then I got him onto the website looking at Don't Tread on Meme. And this is the kind of thing that we do one person at a time. You know, the state cannot be defeated using, I say this all the time, the state cannot be defeated using the weapons of the state, but the weapons that the state can't conceive of in its mind, that it has no defense for, is just exactly what I'm describing. It's telling a businessman, you know what you can do? Here's a way you can make money, and you can get those coins into circulation, and you can create a whole new market for them. Not only are you going to sell them at their melt value, you can sell them at a premium, even though they're not collectibles. You can sell them at a premium simply by laminating them into a card and putting a liberty-oriented logo with them. And you just see the businessman's eyes light up because he sees that as a way to make a profit. And the same way I should have done with this person at the campgrounds, I should have offered real silver, real money, rather than just plastic or cash. So anyway, I don't have a lot of, here's one other thing I wanted to talk about. Now at this campground, they have a horrible Wi-Fi. I tried to log on to the internet. I tried to log on to Facebook. I was able to put one update and then it crashed. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll take my laptop and I'll walk down closer to the office and maybe I can get a little bit better signal. And so I walked down there and I logged onto the internet again and I tried. It's just the connection is so bad. I doubt even after I finish this podcast, like I said, it's Sunday night. I was hoping to do a podcast and have it published for Monday morning, but the odds are I won't be able to publish it Monday morning. The odds are the Monday podcast probably won't get published until maybe Tuesday or Wednesday at very best. And that's assuming I can get a good connection at Porkfest. And I'm told that I shouldn't have high hopes on that, that there may not be a good connection at Porkfest. So I don't actually know when this podcast will be, you know, will actually go out on the internet, but whenever it does. One other thing I wanted to mention. I don't know if this is going to be a full-length podcast. I may have to sew a couple of these together to come up with full-length ones. And but anyway, one thing I wanted to mention. You know, Bob Wenzel did an interview with... Sorry about that, folks. Bob Wenzel did an interview with Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party presidential candidate, not too long ago. And I did a critique of that. And I got a little bit, not a whole lot, but I got a little bit of criticism that I was being too mean and too harsh on Gary Johnson, and that Bob Wenzel was too harsh and he shouldn't have asked Gary those hard questions. Well, then the fun thing about that is that, first off, they were all pretty much softball questions. And Bob, maybe his, you know, maybe he's not a polished interviewer. Maybe his technique could have been a little bit smoother, but that's not what he does. He's an economist. He's a brilliant man and an economist, and he does the podcast strictly as a service to, you know, to people who are interested in things. So, you know, because he didn't sound polished and smooth, and it was a little clumsy, he was not trying to do anything harsh or, you know, an I gotcha or anything. And he actually allowed Gary Johnson several opportunities to dig himself out, but Gary Johnson chose to lie and deceive instead. But anyway, so then now recently, Bob Wenzel did an interview with Tom DeLorenzo. And Tom is, you know, is a very down-to-earth person, does not try to put on any kind of false airs. He doesn't try to put on any kind of a, you know, he's an extremely educated person, but he's very down-to-earth. He's very common speaking, and you know, plus he's got a ton of books that are really good. I think, I'm not sure, but I think I've read all of Tom's books. I don't own all of Tom's books because I have a tendency to buy them, read them, and give them away. But I think I've read all of Tom's books. But anyway, so what does what does Bob Wenzel do? Well, he asks him the same questions that he asked Gary Johnson. And the difference is that you could tell that Tom was honest and answered the questions, rather than trying to make himself into something that he wasn't, or trying to fool, you know, Bob into thinking that he was something that he wasn't. Anyway, so I thought I would mention that as well. I don't know when, like I said, I don't know if this podcast will be put out on Monday or if it'll be sewn together with another podcast. I don't know, but if I can remember to do it, I'll put a link to Bob Wenzel's interview with Tom DeLorenzo. I'm butchering people's names this evening. So I suppose I'll cut that short. This is only half of a podcast, but if I can get that published and get it onto the badquaker.com site, I suppose it'll be better than nothing. The rain's starting to pick up. I'm going to have to close the windows on the motorhome, and it's a little bit warm to be closed up like that, so I'm going to have to kick the air conditioner on, and that's going to make it way too loud to record anything. So, folks, if, you know, I don't know when all these, well, I've said that already, I don't know when all these will get published, but hopefully my listeners can be patient and understand the difficulties of trying to record on the road like this. I am going to try to set up a temporary local low-power radio station at Porkfest. And if I can accomplish that, I'll try to make a YouTube video of the process and where I got, you know, how I got the idea to do it all and everything like that. So maybe that's something to look forward to, assuming that I can accomplish all of that. But anyway, in the meantime, thank you very much for listening to my podcast. For more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, as always, go to badquaker.com. Thank you very much, folks. Goodbye.
And now picking back up on that, today is Thursday, the 28th of June, 2012. I'm on my way home from Porkfest, taking my time, going nice and slow. I'm stuck in New York because New York is like, ugh, it's like tar. You start to try to go through it and it just sticks to you. Anyway, a couple things, a quick update on what I was talking about in the previous podcast. I was going to set up, I took the advice that I read on the internet, and I got a hold of all the separate components to make a legal low-power radio station. And I was going to take that to Porkfest and set it up so that I could broadcast just right there in the campground and do interviews and talk to people and so forth. And I took all the pieces except I left one critical part at home, so there was no radio station at Porkfest. And if I go next year, I'm going to certainly try to accomplish that and not fail the way I did this year. So that's out of the way. Now, I wanted to mention a couple things about traveling. When I got to Vermont, on the way to Porkfest, when I got to Vermont, I took a kind of a back road and went across through some of the mountain passes and really got to see some of the resort areas. And Vermont is just an absolutely beautiful place. And that put me driving slow through small towns, through actually, literally through towns that have been there since, for 200, 250 years, old buildings. And I noticed a lot of elderly people in Vermont in proportion to the young people. Now, there were a lot of young people like in the resort areas, and there were young people bicycling and things like this. But on the actually on the street, walking around in the towns, I saw a lot of old people in greater proportion than the young people. And the same way when I stopped at stores and so forth in Vermont. And I noticed this all the way. Then I drove the whole length of Vermont. I drove across it first, and then the whole length of Vermont up to the campgrounds up near Lancaster, New Hampshire. And then at one point, Kai and I took her Jeep, and we came all the way back down Vermont and then crossed back into New Hampshire and did a podcast from the LRN studios in Keene, New Hampshire. And so I got these different trips back and forth across and around Vermont and New Hampshire. I started noticing a lot of these old people. And the men, the old men, seem to have very, very cheerful faces, mostly. Almost all of the elderly men that I saw had very cheerful faces. And the elderly ladies that I saw, I was struck with the actual attractiveness of the elderly ladies. And it didn't dawn on me at first until I put two and two together and realized that the men were also cheerful. My first thought was, well, I would be a cheerful old man if there was a lot of attractive elderly ladies around too. But then it dawned on me that all of the ladies were very cheerful, very happy looking, very like their lives were pleasant. And so when I left Porkfest and came down Vermont, and again I cut through the mountain passes and stopped in towns, and I stopped in a campground and stayed the night in the mountains in Vermont and really poked around and stopped at, country stores and things like this and just tried to get the feel. And I saw this everywhere in Vermont, the elderly people that looked so pleased and so pleasant and so happy. And the elderly ladies were just so attractive. The years seemed to have dealt very kindly with them. And I contemplated that, and I thought, well, I guess that's what you get for living in Vermont. I mean, it's just, and the same with New Hampshire. It's just a wonderful place. So beautiful and everything. And then I left Vermont, and I came into New York. And almost immediately, what I saw was old men with hardened faces. And I saw elderly women with very, very sad and sometimes angry-looking faces. And they were not attractive, and they were not pleasant-looking. And all the way across New York, this is what I've seen everywhere I've stopped. The people of all ages, they look stressed and strained, and they look like the burden of life is heavy on them. And the older they are, the more they show that. And again, coming across New York, now it's going to sound like I'm picking on New York, but once I got here to where I'm at now, to the campground that I'm at, I'm about midway through New York, I started thinking of the faces in Ohio. And the same thing pretty much was the case. The faces of the elderly people in Ohio are strained and stressed. the weight of the state and the weight of the government and the weight of all the things that are upon them push them and age them and take away the joy out of their life. And you know, you can say, well, Ben, you know, you're always blaming everything on the state. Well, what's the difference between, you know, central New York and central Vermont? What's the difference? And the major and Vermont is not, you know, the state still exists in Vermont, but in much less of a pronounced way than you see in New York and Pennsylvania and Ohio. In New York and Pennsylvania and Ohio, the state is in your face constantly. It's everywhere. The whole trip in Vermont, I saw several police in Vermont, but as far as I recall, every single police that I saw in Vermont was at a construction site, sitting there with their lights on, helping to show traffic that there was construction going on, and to not as a speed trap, but as there as a visual reference so that people knew to slow down. Now, that's not what I saw going across New York. That's certainly not what I saw in Pennsylvania, and that's certainly not what you see in Ohio. When I was on my way to Porkfest, when I pulled into Pennsylvania, immediately I saw two Pennsylvania state police with a car pulled over, and two separate Pennsylvania police cars, with one car that they had pulled over, and they had the man out of the car, and they were discussing with him, and you could tell by the body language that the two police officers were in the process of dominating the conversation and intimidating the man. And this didn't strike me well. Later on, coming through Pennsylvania, and during this trip, I wasn't in Pennsylvania all that long, just a very short period of time. Just go through the edge of it up there between Ohio and New York. But later on, going through Pennsylvania, I saw two more Pennsylvania State Police with a lady pulled over. The lady had, they were clearly searching her car. She had like a plastic container, a big plastic container with a big plastic lid, like you would slide underneath a bed. And she had that up on top of her car, and she was holding up knitting, yarn, bundles of yarn and knitting that she, this clearly was a tote that she kept her knitting in. And she was holding up this knitting, almost shaking it at the cop as to say, you know, this is what you're troubling me over. This is what you're saying to me. This is what I have to deal with. You could just see the frustration in her. And I know what was going on. The cops pulled her over for something, you know, some minor traffic thing, but they couldn't leave it at that. They had to play it right to the end. They had to see what they could push her to do and to say. And you know, the typical questions, well, do you mind if we look back here? If you don't have anything to hide, why, do you mind if we just look in this? Well, what's inside that container right there? And you can just imagine her saying, it's my knitting. Leave my knitting alone. And this is the kind of thing that just ages a person, that just drives them every cell in their body is tense at all times, never knowing when a cop is going to pull you over and pull some of this kind of nonsense with you, like we're seeing on a common basis now. And that's what you see all the way across Ohio, all the way across Pennsylvania, and all the way across New York. You see that attitude coming from the state towards people. Not the state as in the state of Pennsylvania, but the state with a capital S. That demonic thing that I talk about all the time. That flaw in humanity that drives us to not me, but it drives humanity to believe a silly myth that some human beings can put on a costume and somehow they have special rights or special powers, or they have to be treated special, or you have to give them a special title and talk to them in respectful tones. And I don't care who the person is. I don't care if they're a church dignitary. I don't care if they're a police officer that hides behind his badge and his gun, or if they're a court with somebody that calls themselves a judge. that hides behind somebody else's badge and gun to accomplish what they are too much of a coward to do with their own abilities and with their own leadership. They have to rely on some thug with a gun in order to hold the position that they're in. All the way up and down through society, all of these people who put on costumes and tape fake names onto themselves and make themselves to be our gods, like we are supposed to bow before them and we are to do their bidding. Okay, this wasn't supposed to be a rant like that, but that's what it turned into anyway. So I'm naming this podcast There and Back Again because the first half, of course, was the going there, and now I'm in the process of coming back. So I've, like I said, I've stopped at a campground near Corning, New York. I took an unnecessary hour and a half trip around in circles in New York because I hit construction that wasn't clearly marked. And I don't know if I missed the sign, the temporary sign that they had up, or if there just was no temporary sign. But anyway, I missed the road that I was supposed to take, and I ended up wandering around in New York for an hour and a half unnecessarily. So I got here to Corning, which is roughly in the middle of the state, and I decided, all right, that's good enough. There's a campground, a sign for a campground. I'm going to grab it, and I'm getting off the road for the day. My first question at the campground was, do you have internet access and is it a good, reliable one? And they said, oh, of course it is, of course it is. And so I've been trying to use the internet, and on and off it works. I was able to upload one podcast today, the Stefan Molyneux interview. But mostly the internet here does not work. It's down more than it's up. When it is up, it's fairly fast and it's working, but then it'll just drop out for 10 or 15 or 25 minutes for no apparent reason. I may try going over towards the office and see if I can get a little bit better connection. Same story as in the first half of this podcast. Anyway, but I don't like this campground. It's basically a field that someone stopped farming and they put in water and sewer and electric and allow people to park on it. So there's no trees. There's nothing to look at. It's dramatically different than where I was in Vermont, where I had a ski resort on one side and a beautiful mountain on the other side and ponds and trickling water, and Nikki and I could go out and just wander around, and it was really wonderful there in Vermont. And here I am in New York, in basically a field that they just stopped plowing and they've, you know, cashed in on the freeway being close to it. So I did want to talk a couple things, though, about being at Pork Fest and all the fun that we had there. You know, I got to meet Eddie Free, who, if you're not sure who Eddie Free is, he floats around on several podcasts here and there, but the best way to know who Eddie Free is, if you don't know, is look up the Adam Kokesh videos where he was dancing at the Jefferson Memorial. That was Eddie Free's baby right there. That was Eddie Free's thing. And if you look at the video where Adam gets tossed to the ground, the other guy there making faces and holding his hands like, well, you're throwing a guy to the ground for dancing here. That other guy with the kind of long blonde hair, or I should say the strikingly handsome man with the long blonde hair, that's Eddie Free. And I say that because it appeared at Pork Fest, it appeared that he kind of walked around with a collection of admirers almost everywhere he went, because he is quite a popular character in the Liberty Movement. And it was great to meet Eddie in real life and get to talk to him. He came over to the campground a couple times and I got to talk to him. And, you know, randomly, walking around Pork Fest, it's like somebody yells, Ben, come over here. And I turn around, there's Eddie Freeze. He's got this minarchist involved in a conversation. And he brings me over and so, and he's like, tell him about this. And so we just start, off we go, two of us double teaming a minarchist on why it's immoral to vote. So it was really fun. And that was kind of, you know, and there was a wide variety of people. There were, you know, the Libertarian Party had their Gary Johnson supporters there who spread their trash all over the campground and then left before anybody woke up to bust them for it. But there were Gary Johnson supporters there. There were Ron Paul supporters there. There were liberty-oriented people from all across the spectrum, from Republicans to libertarians to anarchists to anarcho-capitalists to voluntaryists to agorists to people who refused to put labels upon themselves. There was this wide variety of people that were there, and there was all kinds of family-related activities and all kinds of family-oriented stuff that was going on, and there was, separate from that, there was the more adult-themed stuff that was going on, and there was, every day, there were, you know, every hour of every, of the daytime at least, of every day, there was activities going on, and there were evening activities going all the way till I think midnight or so. I think every night there was some kind of activities going on, and then after midnight, that there was still quite a bit of activities. But I, you know, I'm old, so by like 9-10 o'clock I was out. But the young folks had a lot of fun later in the evening. I didn't see a lot of conflict there. Oh, and I mentioned well, I better not go into that. We had one person that stopped by the campground that we began referring to as Jericho, because he came by a couple times and expounded on his previous life as a warrior in Jericho, and he told us all about that, and that was quite interesting. So yeah, so I'll leave it at that. I'll just say Jericho was interesting, but above and beyond that, there was really fun people there. There was this guy that showed up that had, when he first came to the campsite, we had, the first day that we were there, Kai had put out a sign, free food and argument, because we were giving away free hot dogs. So, we were giving away free hot dogs and we were giving away free nachos. So we had hot dogs and nachos and sodas, and then there was beer for adults. And we were giving away to anybody that stopped by. They could have, you know, a free hot dog, free nachos, and a free drink. And if they wanted to hang around and talk and discuss, we could do that too. So these people had walked by and saw the sign that said free food and argument. And they had just barely started drinking. So they said, well, we'll drink some more and then we'll come back and we'll argue. So we said, that's great. When you get hungry, come back. Well, a couple hours, they came back. And they were, the least drunk of the group was quite tipsy. The most drunk of the group was a man probably, I'm going to say he was early to mid-30s, very fit and very healthy. He had played the game like you're supposed to. He had gone through college, he had gotten his degree in engineering, he had become an engineer, he was working in the city, he was doing all the right stuff, and one day he said, you know what, I don't like this, I don't like what I'm doing, I don't like my life, I'm moving to Vermont. And I think he was from Vermont, he may have been from New Hampshire. But it was not a liberty-oriented move, it was just he was tired of doing what he was doing, and he wanted to move up there, get up into the mountains, you know, ride his kayak, mess around in the rivers, and work a basic job. So, if I recall, he worked at a hardware store and spent the rest of his time in the summertime when it was warm. He messed around in the rivers and hiking, climbing the mountains like that. In the winter, he rides snowmobiles and he skis and does this kind of stuff. And he's enjoying his life. So here he is. He finds out that there's this nonstop party going on over here. And so he and his friends come out to look and check it out. The more I think about it, he was from New Hampshire because he was from Lancaster right there locally. So he was walking around, he sees a sign, free food and argument, and has a few drinks, comes back when he's good and drunk, And he comes back and he says, I'm here to argue and get free food. So we fed him, but he didn't actually want to argue. He wanted to just ask some questions. And he would ask questions about liberty. And we would talk to him a little bit. And you could just see this distant glow in his mind, like through all the haze of all the alcohol, this stuff was still catching on to him, and he was thinking, you know, this is what I've been missing all along. Because that's what the liberty message does for you, really. It gets deep down inside of that part of your brain, past where the state has infected it, and it gets down to that root source back there from eons ago when man used to be free, and it says, the state is wrong, the state is evil, but liberty is good and freedom is right. And deep down in the deep in the mind of every human being lies that tiny little understanding, still grasping on to our ancient roots. I used to be free. We used to be free. What happened? How can I get that again? And of course, you know, that freedom comes first in your mind. We all want freedom. We all want liberty worldwide. We all want a freer people or a completely free people worldwide. We want that. But whether or not that's going to happen in our lifetime, well, I don't think it will. I don't think it'll happen in the next few generations. But we can begin that path, and we move towards that path through setting the example in our own life and through with the people that we interact, specifically through our children, but also through educating and embracing these concepts and sharing them with others. But really, the path starts in your mind when you realize that the state is, like I was saying earlier in this podcast, nothing but a silly religion. It's a myth. And when you grasp that in your mind, and when you realize that the only thing that you really, you don't have to deal with the state. If you reject it and you say it's not even there, it's just a silly religion that some people believe in. All right, now you're dealing with people. You're not dealing with this monstrous Antichrist that hangs over your head constantly. You're not dealing with that anymore. You're not dealing with the burden of the weight of every single time you go to the DMV or you deal with a bank or you go into Walmart and they, you know, all the nonsense that comes with the state. Because don't fool yourself. Corporations are a part of the state. Government is a part of the state. The military is part of the state. The police are part of the state. The banking industry is part of the state. All of that together is what we accept in our minds as being legitimate, therefore it is legitimate. But when we reject all those things that are based on the aggression of the government, when we reject all those things as being illegitimate, then we realize that it's just people acting. It's religious fanatics acting, and that's what we perceive of when we deal with the state. So when you set that aside and you realize now I'm just talking about a person, I'm not talking about this massive entity that's worldwide that has so much power and controls so many armies. I'm not dealing with that anymore. That's all a figment of the imagination. That's all the myth. That's the lie. That's the religion. But when you realize you're just dealing with a person, whether it be that cop on the side of the street, or whether it's the so-called judge, or whether it's, you know, the bank and what they're doing to your money, or no matter what entity it is that you're dealing with, really, you're just talking about a person. It's a person who wakes up in the morning to the alarm clock, who doesn't want to get out of bed and get going every day and have to repeat the same nonsense over and over. That person right there in that uniform, in that costume, taping that fake name on their chest and using that false power, that person right there is just like you. It's just that they believe this silly myth and they believe the nonsense that goes along with it. But really and truly, they're just like you. They're just another human being trying to live and survive. And then you can realize that They're not above you. They're not your boss. You don't have to fear them. They're not the authority. You have to fear them in the sense that they, because of their silly religious belief, they're liable to turn on you and beat you or cage you or any other kind of nonsense like that. But you can deal with violent thugs a lot better if you realize you're dealing with the individual violent thug. You're not dealing with this massive entity that hangs out there, the state, the government, whatever. You're not dealing with that. You're just dealing with this one individual. And if you treat them with kindness and respect, but firmness, then you get a lot better results than if you cower to their supposed authority, or if you give them a hard time, or, you know, shower them with the same hate that they're throwing towards you. Okay, I kind of wandered there. I was going to talk about driving home, and I didn't. I got totally off the track there. I've got Nikki beside me. She's trying to fall asleep. I'm in the motorhome, and we're going across New York. Well, not at the moment. I already covered all that, but we should be probably in Ohio by tomorrow evening, by Friday evening. I don't know when this podcast will get put up, but I'm going to try to shoot for Friday morning. But it may not be put up until Friday afternoon or Friday evening. So there it is. I want to encourage everybody to plan for Porkfest 2013. Porkfest 2012 was the biggest it's ever been, and there's no reason to believe that Porkfest 2013 won't be bigger and better. I will definitely be there if possible. I don't like to say anything about the future in absolute terms, but I will certainly want to make it there and certainly try. And if so, I will certainly make an effort to have my act together a little bit better, get there earlier, and to be more organized. You know, there were so many people that I got to talk to and see, listeners that... now I don't have time to mention because I've run out of time. A guy got off work, drove 40 minutes to come to Porkfest, and then hunted me down to talk with me. So we sat at my campsite and talked for 3 hours because, you know, he drove 40 minutes after getting off work just to come there. How could I say, oh, nice to meet you. I have something busy to do now. Go away. Leave me alone. I couldn't do that. So I sat down and talked with him for 3 hours, and he was such a wonderful person. I think I could have talked to him for another 20 hours, and it would have just felt like I've known him my whole life. Plus, I really wanted to go see. He has a farm with his own fish, with a fish farm, along with the, you know, vegetable farm and so forth. And I would have loved to go over and see his operation. It just sounded so neat. But Porkfest... I'm running out of time again. Porkfest was just full of people like this. Listeners that I've been talking to on Facebook and hardly ever get to see, well, or never have seen before. And they're all right here in one place, and it was so wonderful and so much fun. And I got to be on Free Talk Live. I got to be on the Angel Clark Show and drove down and saw Keen, saw the LRN FM studios down there, and... it was really great. It was really a lot of fun. I can't brag about it enough. I really am going to make every effort possible to try to get back in 2013. And you really should too, if you can at all do it. It's just, we had a lot of fun. We really did. Well, okay, so for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, you know what to do. Go to badquaker.com. Thanks a lot for listening, folks. Goodbye.